You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Great Scott!
I got a bad feeling about this.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. You, me, or nobody is gonna hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
Yes, sir!
Is your time. Now go out there and take it.
Han Solo, I've been waiting for this day for a long time.
Can't wait.
This is the Bart and Han Show on 98.7 ESPN.
That it is. Carlin in for Han today on Bart and Han at 800-919-3776. Over on Twitter at Bart and Han. And, of course, on the gram, Bart and Han as well. We have baseball, Bart. We have baseball to discuss. We have baseball to review. We have baseball to preview. We have live sports to discuss, my friend.
We got action, man. And I tell you what, if you're a Yankee fan, you couldn't be more pleased. You didn't have to go into your bullpen. The game was called. Gerrit Cole looked great. Stanton looked awesome, right? And you were able to listen to Alex in the booth talking about how skinny sweet he looks and the fact that it looks like he's more flexible and pliable and all that good stuff. He might have hung out with TB12 down there and got some of that good stuff. No nightshade vegetables. But everybody looked good. But what I loved about it was the element that Tyler Wade brought to the team. The speed, the youth, being able to bunt, play a little small ball, being able to score from second base. That's what you want to see from the Yankees. You want to see the complete package. You want to be able to say, hey, we can beat you with the long ball, but we can beat you playing small ball and doing what's right, you know, hitting, running, things like that. And I feel like that's something that we haven't seen from the Yankees in the past. It's been either home run or bust. I know last year that narrative changed a little bit with DJ LeMahieu because he's just a contact hitter that can get the ball wherever he needs to get it. Glaber did it as well a little bit. But it looked like it was more of a concerted effort to do the little things as well as be able to get the moonshot from Giancarlo. And we talked about this before. Giancarlo being able to be probably one of the players that were going to benefit from the fact that there were no fans in the stands, nobody booing him, nobody heckling him. He can focus and lock in. And it looked like, you know, so far, so good. Let's see if he can stay healthy. Let's see if, how they use him, how much they want to use him, you know, as DH. Don't really see them using him out in the field as much. But if he's going, that's the bonus, right? That's the extra cheese on the taco. That's the whipped cream. That's the sour cream on top, right? Because you don't expect anything from him because you haven't seen anything from him. You know, I know he carried the team for a slight second the first year, but he hasn't been what you thought he was going to be, and that's an MVP candidate.
Not by any stretch has he been what you thought he would be. And, you know, when you look back at the last couple of years, this was how you actually drew it up with him and Judge playing together. Bart, they have played together over the last two seasons only 38% of the time. I mean, that's ridiculous. And last night is exactly what you had envisioned, not just from hitting the bomb in the first inning, but if you noticed, and somebody posted the video on Twitter as well, there was Judge on second base, and he kind of signaled right before the pitch with his left arm. He kind of lifted it up, and I don't know if he was signaling fastball or if he was signaling out over the plate, but he was helping, and that's legal. You know, that's within the confines of legality in the game, you know, for second base runners. But he gave him a little help there, too. And I'll tell you, you know, to me, it wasn't even about the home run. It was about the base hit later on. It was about clutch situation, It was about going the other way with a pitch. And I know it sounds so cliche and whatever, not trying to do too much and all that. You know what? Doesn't matter. The guy drove in runs, and that's what he's here to do. And the two of them together drove in all four runs last night. And say what we will, they are a completely different team when you can have the two of them on the field. We talk about how good they are to begin with and how stacked they are to begin with. But I don't think that the proper due is given to when the two of them are on the field at the same time, what they're really capable of doing.
Yeah, I mean, just imagine when DJ LeMahieu comes back. I mean, I love Aaron Hicks, but I mean, you think about getting the DJ on his on-base percentage, his ability to get on base and to be able to have like battles, you know, and be able to really work the count. You know, you add that to it and being able to say, hey, you're going to have opportunity like to have to go through this mean lineup. It's mean when you have, you know, you have Stanton feeling confident and getting on base and not chasing out pitches out of strike zone. You know, much like Gary Sanchez did. Gary looked like the old Gary. He looked like Stanton looked before. It was like automatic outs every once in a while to crack and would make contact. But he seemed disciplined at the plate. He seemed comfortable at the plate. And maybe it's because he knew this park. Maybe because he sees the ball well at this park. I mean, you heard the announcers say that he has more home runs at this park than any other person in baseball. So maybe he was comfortable. Let's see if he can keep it going.
You know, we're going to get to the Yankee calls here early, by the way, in the next few minutes at 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. So load them up. We'll get to that in just a few minutes. But, you know, Bart, Gerrit Cole is exactly what was advertised, and not that he was off the charts amazing last night. He wasn't. He didn't have his best stuff. He was severely amped up in that first inning. He doesn't leave pitches like that up to Adam Eaton very often, but I do look at what he did and think about that that's going to be the most impressive and important factor about it when you are not at your best, what you're right. capable of doing. And that was a grinding performance.
Right, and we've seen him, and he was critical of himself last year, said he gave up too many home runs, gave up one early, and then he settled in. I thought he did a tremendous job in trying to get everything together. But when you look at that, you look at what Cole is here to do. He's here to give you innings. He's here to save that bullpen that I thought was overtaxed. You heard Britton Adebino last year said, hey, you know, we were tired. Right, so now you got a starting pitcher that you can bank on giving you innings because you don't know what you're going to get out of Tanaka, you know, if you're going to keep him at five or six. But you know, with Cole, you're going to get seven, maybe eight, if he's on his game, and that's going to save that bullpen, and that's the strength of your team. But now keeping them fresh for guys who may need it, you know, when you get down to like your Montgomerys of the world and things of that sort, you should be fine, you know, with being able to, say, utilize them and be able to keep them fresh in a shortened season, but keep them fresh for the season because last year they wore it out.
This, by the way, is Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And, look, it's the difference that a guy like this makes, that there's never a worry, no matter what the situation is. There's never a worry about your ability to win a game. It's an anomaly when they don't pitch well enough to win you a game, or they don't pitch well enough to keep you in a game. And, you know, if this was a regular season, I would, meaning 162 games, I would honestly look at Cole and say he has a chance to win 25 with that lineup. He absolutely could if he's going to be that kind of pitcher, that kind of guy that you could just look at and know he's going to give you everything you need to try to navigate your way through, even when he is not at his best. And I'll tell you the other thing, too. He and Sanchez were on the same page a lot of the night. Yeah. I don't love the whole down on one knee thing. I don't know how that's going to work out with base runners and such. But yeah, it didn't look like the two of them were not in agreement on most things. Now, if you're Sanchez, it doesn't matter if you're in agreement or not. You listen to what Cole wants to do.
Right, exactly.
But I thought that was a pretty impressive aspect of it. And Cole went right to giving him credit after the game.
I thought we had like a sound.
Oh, no, that's my bad. I set it up like it was. I gave you the wrong inflection.
you set up and everything. But you think about, you know, Sanchez, and you heard Alex again talking about he wasn't a fan of it as well. With base runners, maybe that knee comes off the ground if he has, you know, runners in scoring position or somebody on base that way. Maybe that comes up, but at least you know they're trying. And the fact that he can do that is because he looks like he's in tremendous shape. It looks like, you know, the trend in sports right now is the old vegan Carmelo skinny diet or something. Like everybody jumped on it, you know. So, you know, so far, so good. It's going to be interesting, man. Just see them get off to a fast start. Bats come alive early. You know, you haven't even seen, you know, guys really get their rhythm. And we were concerned because we thought that, you know, everything that we had saw and heard about some of the inner scrimmages, it seemed like the pitching was so far ahead of the hitting. When you talk about Cole, you don't worry about Cole. Even if he's struggling, he has the firepower. It's crazy, right? We got two Cy Youngs in this town. One gets run support. We don't know if the other one will, right? So, like, you know, DeGrom, you know, you feel like if they don't, you know, if he doesn't keep it under two, then he may lose the game, you know. You know that this lineup is so explosive, so powerful, can explode at any time. Even the back end of the lineup, you know, you know that they're never out of a game. And all they have to do is get into the other team's bullpen, and then that's when they do their major damage. So, I mean, Cole should understand that he has a luxury. You know, he almost just doesn't have to make it up and mess it up. And that's almost any other starting pitcher, whether it's Paxton, whether it's Tanaka, Montgomery. Having that so much firepower offensively gives you such a piece of calm that you don't have to press. You know what I mean? That you don't have to take unwarranted chances. You know, on the other side, you got Serger, you know, being arrogant and just throwing 1,000 sliders in a row. And, you know, it's just like, hey, if you the old Terminator, if you can hit it, you can rename it. But, you know, it was interesting to see how they handled him. You know what I mean? And they got to him early. And then I know he was so frustrated watching Tyler Wade get on with a bunt, and then watching him score from second on a double.
Did he score from second or first on that play? I think on the Judge double down there. I think he scored from first.
From first?
Yeah, on the double down the line. Yeah,
I mean, did I blink? but man, when have you ever said that about the Yankees though?
Yeah, base running has not been a big part of it for a while. Base running, you know, and hit and run and all that stuff. And do I think they're automatically going to become a small ball team? No, but I also think it's in their arsenal. You know, They can do it when they need to do it.
And depending on who's up, right? If you got Andujar, if you got, you know, Wade up, then hey, man, you know, green light. You get to that third base, don't even look at me, go.
All right, let's not waste any time. Get to the Yankee calls now. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Here's Joe in New Jersey to start us off today. Joe, you're on Bart and Hahn. What's up?
How are you? Just I wanted to comment in regards to about a few minutes ago with Tanaka, not knowing is he going to pitch four or five innings. And one thing that just got to me was it's 12 starts, providing they're healthy. And I really hope that if they're pitching well, not to worry about a pitch count. Because with the shortened season, they just have to let these guys pitch. I mean, what do you think on that?
Well, you got a couple of things there. If you're going to talk about Tanaka, first of all, you have to factor in he's a free agent at the end of the year. So if you want to use him up, go use him up. That could be somebody else's problem. But I think the Yankees probably want to bring him back, given what his Yankee record is in the postseason. But having said that, that doesn't seem to be the idea that you're getting from Boone so far. I mean, Bart, they're trying to ramp him up. They don't want to wear him out right away. So his next minor league start is, what, probably going to be 40 pitches. And that means the one after that, where the 31st, which is next Friday when he could pitch, you know, and rejoin the team, is probably going to be like 60 pitches.
But aside from him, even the other pitchers, you know, like last year we saw it a lot. And you mentioned that the bullpen got taxed last year because they were five, you know, okay, we got five out of them. Let's bring in the bullpen. And in this case, you may not have to do that, providing they're pitching well. Now, if you're getting shelled, then I get it. You got to pull them.
No, listen, I appreciate the call, Joe. And look, I get the sentiment behind it, right, Bart, is that – you know, you want to not wear out the pen because that's been such a problem before. Yeah. But you also don't want to run into the ground the guys that you're paying the most money to. And that's the starting pitchers.
Yeah, I mean, you shouldn't be able to wear them out, to his point. You shouldn't be able to wear them out in 60 games and 12 starts. They should be fine. With that being said, you don't know where their arms are at as far as getting them stretched out, so you don't want them to go past their limit. You know, the thing about, you know, being able to ramp yourself up in a 162-game season, that you're able to do that. Right now, if you force them too far, that's when the injuries can happen, and soft tissue injuries, and then you still have an injured pitcher going into the postseason, which you don't want. Some guys like Cole, that's already prepared to go the distance, maybe Montgomery because he's been rehabbing and coming back for a long time, you let go. I mean, it was surprising for me that they left Scherzer in as long as they did before, because it looked like he was coming back out. And I think he was close to 100 pitches. But some guys are different. Some guys have been doing the work, been throwing, and some guys maybe, you know, was nursing small injuries and getting back. But I think with Tanaka, you got to be careful with Tanaka, because you're always concerned with that UCL coming back and doing something to him. We always think, hey, it may go. You don't want to do anything that he tells you he's not ready to do.
Let's hit Don in Paterson, New Jersey. Don's up next on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Don.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. First of all, I'm a huge Jets fan. Bart, I love you. One of my favorite players of all time, man. I love you.
Are you loving Jamal today?
Yeah, first of all, big Yankee fan. I was really pleased with last night's game. How did Angel Hernandez have a job, let alone an umpire? Oh, my God. That guy's terrible.
Hey, did you see
that? Would you think about Dr. Fauci's pitch? At least it was socially distant from the plate, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Angel called that a strike.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
I stole that from somebody on Twitter last night. I don't know who it was. Appreciate it, Don.
Fauci hit us with one of those. He hit us with one of them 50 Cent pitches when he threw the first pitch off of the mat. He looked like him and 50 Cent. Who did it better? I think Fauci has a built-in excuse. He can say he had so much hand sanitizer on his hand that it was sticky that he overgripped the ball.
How about this excuse? He's 79 years old.
He's 79?
He's 79.
Man, he looks damn good to be 79.
He does. He does. I'll cut him some slack, but can we talk about Angel Hernandez for a second? I mean, there are some things in life that are consistent. Death, taxes, and Angel Hernandez is atrocious. I mean, he is so bad. And what he's talking about with him being still employed, it's a great question. And the reason is, unfortunately, that Angel is suing Major League Baseball. And he's suing them because he thinks he hasn't been promoted. And it has to do with him being of Hispanic descent and him, all the other reasons other than the fact that he has for 20 years been one of the worst officials, if not the worst, in all of professional sports. Let alone Major League Baseball. This is a man who called somebody out at home plate because he had a plane to catch. This happened. This happened with the Mets and Bobby Valentine in 1998, 99. Bart, I'm watching him last night, and he is, because of all the umpires who have opted out, and I did not realize this.
Yeah.
He is the interim crew chief, so he's the dope who had us sitting there for 2 hours last night. Really?
He was like, I'm all right, man. Listen, that first one to Kendrick, man, that thing was so far off the plate. I was like, what the hell is he? Listen, he is going to be the argument in the suit by the players about having automated strike zones and getting rid of the guy from behind there, man. I don't know what the hell, but listen, he's willing to fight the pandemic, whatever, when some of the other umpires, you know, said, you know what, it's not worth the risk. They decided not to do it. So who gets the promotion? Andrew Hernandez.
Oh, God. And they're, because they're looking around at the rest of the crew like, what are these guys, 10 years old? We can't promote them. We can't make them the crew tier. I might argue that you could if that's the option.
Yeah.
He is just the worst, and it's almost like he enjoys being the worst. He's like the Manish of umpires. That's really what he is. He's so bad at it, and it's absolutely amazing how bad he is at it. This has been Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less, only at Walmart. Can we discuss one other thing here that from yesterday I just think is awful? This new playoff format is a killer for the Yankees. I think it works 100% against them because you have 8 teams now in each league. So in case you haven't heard what the new playoff format for this year is going to be, 16 teams in the playoffs, that's more than half in the league, are in the playoffs. Every first and second place team in the division will make the playoffs. And then the last two teams with the best record in each league will make the playoffs. The division winners will be seeded 1 through 3. The teams in second place with the best record will be seeded 4 through 6, and then the 7th and 8th team. But the only benefit out of it for the teams that are the highest seed is that in that best of three series, the first time around, in the first round, all three games will be at home. So let's say the Yankees are the top seed and they're playing the 8th seed. All three games in that 2 out of 3 series would be at Yankee Stadium. Here's the only problem there. There's no fans. You get no actual home field advantage other than the fact that you don't have to get on an airplane. I mean, I hate it. I think it takes away from the importance of winning the division, Bart. I think that's just silly.
Well, it's something that everybody's going to have to deal with. You think about some of the other teams, if Tampa wins or if one of the Florida teams win, they may have fans in there. You know, that's the odd thing, right? Because it depends on what's your demographic, I mean, what's your geography, like where are you located? Because if Tampa gets it, right, I'm assuming that Tampa is allowed to have fans.
I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll have to wait and see what the deal is. I don't think that they can have fans yet, but it's a complete mess. And I get baseball wanting to expand the postseason. I have no problem with wanting
some
to
of that
do
money, get some of that money back. So
I have no problem with that. Go and do it. Go nuts. And this is the year to try new things. But this could have been much better thought out than getting it done 24 hours before the season started, or not even like 3 hours before the season started, and you still hadn't found a place for the Blue Jays to play, which, by the way, finally they're going to play in Buffalo.
I can't wait to October.
The Buffalo Blue Jays in a minor league stadium. Oof. That is going to be rough. Yankee calls at 800-919.
Stand at the Motel 6. Eating Applebee's, according to Willis McGahee, right? He said all Buffalo has is ugly girls and Buffalo wings. And
well, I'll say this. The Buffalo wings at the right place, not like the tourist trap, like the Anchor Bar, which is the first place where they ever had wings. If you go to Duff's and you get the wings, you will never leave. You will move in. You will bring a cat with you.
So I can speak for experience.
Oh, I know from whence I speak, my friend. It's always a treat when DeGrom's on the mound.
I mean, you got to love when DeGrom's on the mound. We got to see one of the New York aces. Now we get to see the other one, the reigning Cy Young winner, see if he can go for 3 and put himself in some rarefied air. It's important, right, because we always hear Brody say, oh, man, look at how great we were in the second half of the season. Well, this is technically the second half of the season, and guess what? You have no L's. You ain't got served up no L's, as Shannon Sharp would say, right? No L's has been served up to the Mets. So if you just duplicate what you've done in the second half of the season, the Mets should be A-OK and a real threat, understanding that, you know, they made some tweaks to the bullpen, and we all talked last year, oh, well, they lost. They would have won 22 more games if the bullpen was just halfway decent. Well, you hope that Betances can be the difference. Seth Lugo, you know, won't get stressed out. Stroman has you nervous. But as a Met fan, it is my job to be optimistic day one. And if I go 1-0 until I go two games below 500, I'm celebrating every single day because you said the over-under was what? 31?
31.
I'm saying, damn it, we can get 32 and a half.
And yesterday was a phenomenal day for the Mets because making the playoffs just got a whole lot easier for them. I mean, it would be hard to argue they're not in the top half of the teams in the National League.
And, you know, you got to think, man, they can be dangerous with that pitching. You know, they can be dangerous if Stroman can come back and be healthy even without, you know, Noah Syndergaard.
Well, what I was going to say is, let's talk about that for a second. I actually think it's a different approach this season after you lose Stroman. You know, they've been so much about winning with the pitching over the last few years.
One of the last teams to do it that way, right?
Yeah, and they haven't been able to do it. You know, they don't score runs. Bart, I honestly believe they're going to have to change it up this year. They're going to have to be the team that pummels you a little bit and goes out and puts up 6, 7, 8 runs to win consistently. And I'm not talking about DeGrom starts here. And please, you know, anybody who wants to bring up DeGrom, please do. We all know he's an incredibly dominant pitcher. But the Mets are 28-32 in his starts the last 2 years. They don't win consistently enough when the back-to-back Cy Young Award winner is on the mound. And think about it. He's done it in spite of you. He has done that in spite of the New York Mets. There is no getting around that. So having said that, they have to beat up on people. Bart, the most important Met to me, and I can't believe I'm saying it, is the guy that hasn't taken a swing in a regular season game in 2 years, and that's Yoenis Cespedes. Because he can make the difference with them being a dominant offensive team versus a decent offensive team.
I mean, we got the lineup, right? I was wondering, like, who was going to bat lead off.
And, you want me to give it to you?
Yeah, go ahead. Let's go down. Let's go down all the right. Lineup.
This is what we got today. In center, it's Nimmo leading off. Then you got Jeff McNeil at third, Alonso at first, Conforto in right, Cespedes DHing, Cano batting sixth at second base, J.D. Davis seventh, Wilson Ramos eighth, Ahmed Rosario ninth. Boy, I don't hate that lineup.
Not at all. I mean, you got two contact hitters right at the top of the order, and then you got the guy that hit – just as many home runs as anybody in baseball last year in Pete Alonso. Then you're hoping that Conforto can be the guy that we hope that he can be consistently. Now, he's been good, but we're hoping that he can be great. You know, and if he can do that, I mean, Cano is, you know, gives you concern. I know last year he struggled early on. It looks like he was guessing on pitches, and he was ahead of and just kind of swinging early, trying to get out there because it didn't look like his bat speed was as good. Yeah, look, I had slowed down a little bit. But, I mean, for me, who I'm trying to hang it on and put the pressure on and who I'm expecting big things from is Ahmed Rosario, Conforto, Pete Alonso, and these younger guys on the top, and then Cespedes to be that spark, you know what I mean, that he's always been since he's been here. When he's healthy, he's able to do damage. So you're hoping that he can be that. Understanding that it's a contract year, if you're going to get your best out of Yoenis, it's usually when his money on the line, he usually comes through. So if you just get, like, you know, the speed and the contact, and, you know, they can play small ball, but then they got the big boys behind them to bring those guys in, then it's hope. But if you can't get run support, I mean, we've seen DeGrom give up one, give you 7 innings, go to the side and lose 3-1. It's like, man, it's discouraging, right? But that's because the bullpen couldn't hold on. I know it's a lot to put on Batanz is coming back from an injury, but we're asking him to step up and be one a big-time contributor. You know what I mean? Him staying at home, still pitching in front of his family and friends, you know, to be able, you know, especially coming back after, you know, not being able to really contribute last year with the Yankees going across town. We need Batanz to step up and be big-time. And not just to be a big-time as far as his performance, but be a big-time leader because he knows what winning looks like. He knows what excellence looks like. So he should bring a standard of excellence. He should bring an aura about himself. He should be one of those respected veterans in that locker room to tell guys how winning is done, because a lot of these guys haven't done a lot of winning and a lot of winning, and they don't know what it looks like.
Yeah, that's me again. How you doing?
Okay, what's up?
I'm like, huh? You know, I mean, you're looking at me and I'm talking, and here's what's going on. When I have done that, I am hitting a button to cough and to just, you know, not breathe like this into the microphone so you don't have to hear that. And I shut off the, and I hit the mute button and I didn't turn it back on. Hey, dope, wake up.
I'm looking like, not again.
Yeah. I don't want to put that on anybody else. That's me. Well done. Anyway, the point being is this. Betances is somebody that has seen what it looks like before. You're 100% right about that. And from that bullpen, he has to be the guy that we know he's capable of being, that he's been in the past. It's just he's been so banged up. Can you rely on him to stay healthy? These are all questions that are always going to shoot through every Met fan's mind. And I get where that's coming from. That's why I'm just so out in front on this offense thing. Alonso, you cannot afford the sophomore jinx. Right. You cannot afford that in the least. You cannot afford that from Jeff McNeil, frankly, even though it's not really the sophomore year at this point. You need these guys to continue to be exactly what they have been so far in their career. I have no reason to think that they won't be. And Bart, you know, I think the thing that doesn't get talked about enough with Alonso is just the leadership. You know, the Mets haven't had that kind of a guy since David Wright was playing at his very best, and he could be a leader. And it's just so important to see because they don't have that element to them.
He checks all the boxes, right? You allow Yoenis not to have to be a leader to be the wild card. He's like the Dennis Rodman of the group. He's allowed to be carefree, say, hey, Phil, hey, Rojas, hey, I need a day off. I need to go ride
I'm going to go play golf.
Yeah, exactly. I need a day off. You know what I mean? But he's the reliable, responsible one that he's going to be there. Listen, leadership doesn't come with an age. It comes with an aura. It comes with the respect of your teammates. It comes with the work ethic. It comes with accountability. And he's done and said everything right. And just remember, we were talking about, you know, him not even, you know, getting starting the start of the season so they can control him, you know what I mean, as far as his days or whatever. And, you know, Brody was kind of criticized for starting, saying, no, we're gonna do what's right, what's best for the team. And, man, did he deliver. And he didn't slow down after the home run derby. You know what I mean? He figured it out. He was consistent throughout the season. And you have to be aware of him. That's why it's great, and I'm happy that he seems to have protection this year. Now that Nimmo's back from the neck injury, you know, Jeff McNeil is healthy. Now he has protection. Now you can't pitch around him because you may have to pitch to him because these guys are going to be on base.
800-919-3776. We're going to get to some Met and Yankee calls here momentarily. 800-919-ESPN. Good time to get through. You know, two other things quickly. Just to give you a little bit of perspective on the Cespedes thing that I was talking about, I went back this morning and looked. Since the Mets got Cespedes in 2015, with Cespedes in the lineup and DeGrom on the mound, since they got Cespedes, they are 32-20 in those games. The Mets are. So first of all, the fact that it's only 52 games that they've actually been together with DeGrom on the mound and Cespedes in the lineup, that's problematic enough. But it just shows you that 62% winning percentage there, yet they can't win without him over the last couple of seasons. And that's the big difference maker that he is. It's not even necessarily that he actually goes and produces. It's the mere presence that he has in the lineup makes everybody better. But, Bart, you and I were talking about this before the show, and I think you mentioned it before. You know, I don't want to hear from Brody about the second half stuff. Brody was already telling me preseason about how great the rotation was, and he sent that right into the tank. So now we're going to talk about how great the team was in the second half when there was no pressure on. You brought it up yesterday, and it's a brilliant point. It's just silly to suggest that when you have a second half that doesn't mean much, that you can put all the stock you want into it.
Right. I mean, we call it fool's gold a lot of times because you got to think that the opponents that you're playing are resting players. You don't know what the circumstances are. You know, they're out of it. They're trying to tank. You know, they're trying to figure out their team, get a look at young prospects as well. So you're not facing the best. You know, guys got injuries. We know that they go on IL, things of that sort. So, you know, sometimes you can be blinded with the truth. You know, because it's not the facts. You know, but when you look at, you know, like Brody, I mean, I wonder, looking at this lineup, who won the argument? Did Rojas win the argument? Because looking at where Cano was hitting at, it seems that maybe you know they're allowing Rojas to do his job.
I don't know. I'm skeptical to think that the lineup on any team these days comes from anywhere but the analytics department. But if you're Brody, if the team winning means that you have to have Cano hitting sixth, you got to swallow it. You got a 60-game season. You got a great chance to get to the postseason. You can't. There's no time to wait around for guys to, you know, to get into it after 10 or 15 games and get into the groove. You do what you got to do here.
No, absolutely. You think about, you know, Cano, man, starting off and He was better in the second half. We don't know why he was injured or where he was at the start of the season, but the fact that, you know, he's in the lineup. He was supposed to be brought in here to be a tremendous mentor to Rosario. You saw him talking to Rosario a lot last year. Rosario seemed to respond and respect it. But with Yoenis back, I wonder, like, you know, does he have to, you know, be relied on that much? I would like to see him maybe getting days off and keeping him healthy and working him in, because I like to see McNeil at second base at his natural position. You know, and I feel like, you know, Cano could potentially be holding the team hostage. And listen, we need people. We need Cano. We need Diaz. We need to see some productivity from this trade, because we gave up great prospects, number one prospects, top prospects for these guys, and it was because we didn't want to waste Jacob DeGrom's prime. Having one of the best pitchers in the game and not being able to play meaningful baseball, not being able to play postseason baseball, is a joke. We need to be able to take, you know, capitalize. We wish Syndergaard was still here with Stroman. You know, they let Wheeler go because they had Stroman in the building. Me personally, I much rather had Wheeler because I feel like Wheeler knew what it was like to pitch in this market, and he had found himself. He had found a way to stay healthy. But, you know, that's a story for a different day. But it's time for these guys to put up. You know, I understand that they were in the World Series in 2015. That was 5 years ago. It's time for them to put it together, and it's time to have some respect put on the name of the Mets. And then we need both of our teams playing well in this town.
There's no excuse not to make the playoffs this year. There's no excuse. Zero. And I don't care that Stroman and Syndergaard are out. It just got a whole lot easier for you yesterday. No excuse. So Jamal Adams makes some public comments for the first time, telling the Daily News about how Adam Gase is not the guy to lead the team. How this is nothing personal, but they have completely misled him on wanting to sign him to a long-term deal. Clearly does not trust anybody in the organization anymore. Jamal is following what Bart to me looks like a losing playbook of trying to get what he wants when he has absolutely no leverage whatsoever, and he's just making the situation worse.
I mean, it's extremely worse. I mean, he's doubling down on a double down. I mean, you attack the organization, you attack the head coach now, you attack the owner or not active owner. You're saying that you've been lied to. Like, Jamal, you're a player, and I understand that players have power. But you're a player early in your career. You don't have the position or the status to be able to tell them how to do their job. I mean, I think some of the comments were like they came with a young general manager like Joe Douglas. Joe Douglas was sought after. He was one of the young, bright minds in the sport. And thinking that you can try and finagle your way out may not get you what you want, because you have to understand, what's the compensation? If you're as good as you believe you are, then you got to understand the organization look at you as good as you think you are as well. So that means that they're going to have to get over your value, not equal your value, over your value to be able to make a move. We see the same thing happening in Jacksonville with Yannick. And they won't let Yannick go, and they already have his replacement there. And some people can say, well, Marcus May can be his replacement here. But see, where they're stuck at is they don't own his rights next year, because he was a second-round draft pick. So they have to let him go or franchise tag him. Jamal, you're still under contract this year, next year. They can franchise you the year after that and the year after that. So they will have to get at least a Micah Fitzpatrick type of deal, a high first, a third, because now they have to replace you, or now they got to try and find a more dominant player. And I just think that it's damaging his brand, because it's so much now. When you speak once, okay. If you want to make another statement, then don't show up to training camp. See, this is the thing. With the new CBA, it makes it where players can't play that. They can take that out of their playbook. Because now you get fined and you don't get that money back.
One thing about that, though, I checked on that, and a guy that is between the first and second deal can actually get those fines forgiven, but the guy in the second and third deal can't. That's where the difference is.
Okay, well, they don't
have to. So he could try to hold out and hope that they forgive his fines.
Or they could say, you know what, we ain't forgiving nothing. You're going to play for damn near free for this year, because now you've also tried to publicly embarrass our owner. You know, you should have just kept your mouth shut, at least waited to the process to play out. But now, you know, I think he's doing some damage that could be irreparable.
So there's a couple of things that really get to me here about it. It's a dumb playbook, and if it was written up by his agent, you need a new agent. Because your agent is doing nothing but ruining not only his relationship with the Jets, but and for any future clients he might have with the team, but also getting a bad rap across the board. Because if this is how you're advising him, nobody in the league is going to be thrilled about dealing with you. That's number one. Number two, so we go from being the, you know, unnamed source in trying to force your way out to complaining on your Instagram to trying to force your way out. To now we're going to give quotes to a reporter that's more than happy to be used by you.
Right.
And I understand that. Any one of us as reporters would be. But next time, just have your agent write it because he'll write it better. And honestly, he's probably a better writer. And then you're going to go and say in all the middle of this, oh, this has nothing to do with the Jets fans. They're great. I love the Jets fans. Like, you're trying to position yourself as the good guy here.
Yeah, you can be.
And then you're saying, and by the way, I'm showing up to training camp. I'm going to play because I'm a pro, and I'm not going to let my teammates down. There's a difference between guys going and getting every last penny in the NFL, which they should, and doing it this way. Which is not the right way. You're saying that you, having been in the league 3 years, knows infinitely more than Joe Douglas, who's been in the year for his entire or been in the league for his entire career, and Adam Gase has been in the league in his entire career. It could be arguable that Gase is not the guy. He might be right about that. Don't do this publicly.
Yeah. And how do you know after 1 year? And the thing is, like, you paint yourself. He's stuck in trying to paint himself a certain way. You can't be the hero and the heel at the same time. The villain. He's trying to be both. You can't. He's trying to be the villain to get out, and he's trying to be the hero to try and get money. But you can't do it that way. You got to pick a side. You either got to be hated by this fan base and hope that the fan base wants you out of here, the organization wants you out of here. You can't be both. And, like, he's going, oh, like, it's like an oxymoron. Like, I don't want to be here. The organization lied to me. It should be accountability at the top. Oh, I'll be at training camp because I love my teammates. Like, now your teammates have to answer questions about your comments. The coach has to answer questions about your comments. The general manager has to answer questions about your comments. You've just made it more difficult for everybody, so you're being a distraction. And, listen, they don't have to bend. Like I said, I've seen this with Ocho Cinco. In Cincinnati, when he tried to force his way out, and they wouldn't let him out, right? Like, so it doesn't always help. How did that help? You know, Ocho's reputation around this league. Now, Jamal, you're known to have a tremendous brand. Every day, every statement that he makes, he's chipping away from all of the hard work that he's done to be seen as an outstanding leader, a hard worker. All that's going to be going by the wayside if he keeps opening his mouth. He's best to do his negotiating behind closed doors like professionals do, because he's trying to do it outwardly, and then eventually they're going to call his bluff and they're going to say, okay, well, we're not doing nothing. Negotiations are over with. We don't even see you with the future of our team, and they're going to hold you hostage and look to trade you to a place that you may not want to go that will hold you hostage.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays from 1 to 3 on 98.7 ESPN.